Body Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amon-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton, and former Compton College Board of Trustees, and Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, and student of Cowie Philosophy. Want to welcome you to the Conscious Corner, where we just do nothing but facts about Black. And we speak truth to power and just try to have a deep thinking and courageous questions about what's going on in the Black African community. As part of our panel, we have Ernest McBride Jr., archivist for his father, Ernest McBride Sr., and one who's but pretty in-depth in the Long Beach community with activities, the African-American Culture Center, and other organizations that he's affiliated with. But a deep thinker and a person we deeply appreciate in bringing his wealth of knowledge and experience to the platform. We have tonight Brother Rashiki Maskani, who is responsible for this platform under the Community Education Network. Rasha Key is a serious, serious contributor to the Black liberation and culture movement by putting on this platform called the Community Education Network, by which he lets the Conscious Corner share. Every Wednesday, Community Education Network, along with subsidiary programs about health and reggae and different platforms, that he worked with other groups, and they have intermediate forms of platforms that they discuss. We have other panelists that tonight's a tough night because it's election night, and a lot of people are just getting ready for their games tomorrow, New York and the Spurs, so we don't know if we're going to get a panel, so we're going to just get right into the discussion tonight. And hopefully that you can get something out of it, because it's very important. It's not that important, but it's very important that we, as Dr. Karenga once said, a people that don't celebrate itself is lost forever. And sometimes we have a tendency not to appreciate the good, the excellence, and the achievement that African people have made, not just in America, but in the world, with regards to their struggle for to be themselves, to free themselves so they can be themselves. And that leads me to African Liberation Day. And they call it ALD, which is very unique. But even the month of May is a very unique month, because it's full of some, it's like Black August, but you got days that are rooted in the Black experience. And people don't even know that. You understand that when it comes down to Mother's Day, Mother's Day, both, there's two. One started by Anna Jarvis, started the one in America in 1920, because she was celebrating her mother. Her mother, her name was Anna Jarvis, but her mother's name was Ann Jarvis, where Ann Jarvis started a day of recognizing mothers before her daughter pushed for a Mother's Day celebration in America. Now, this is important because it's rooted in the black issue, because it was about the Civil War, which they fought over Black people. So they wanted to, and the mother of the lady that pushed for the holiday in America, she just wanted to do it to recognize her mother. Her mother had about 12, 13 kids, Ann. And Anna never had any kids, But she was so close to her mother, she started pushing for a day to celebrate Mother's Day. But her mother was an activist named Anne. And she named her daughter Anna, but she was an activist. And her whole thing was about recognizing the struggles of mothers after the Civil War with all the deaths of the men and the soldiers and things of this nature. So in a sense, Black people contributed to the origin of what you call Mother's Day. And that's very crucial. And you get to Memorial Day. Memorial Day was started by Black soldiers in 1865. This in May. That's very important because Black people don't even know. They get their barbecue, they take the day off, they don't even know the origin. That these were Black soldiers that fought in the Civil War. They came out and had a commemoration of the soldiers that were put in a prison and buried, and they dug them up, and they marched them, and they gave them a formal burial. And that set the day for the first Memorial Day. You understand? Then you have Malcolm X's birthday on May 19th. You understand? Which is he's a martyr. One of the most quoted persons and a role model to emulate. Why was he a role model? First of all, his discipline. Ozzie Davis said, when we celebrate during his eulogy, said, he was our Black prince, a shining Black prince. And when we celebrate Malcolm, we're celebrating the best in ourselves. That's what Ozzie Davis said. He did his eulogy. But Elhaj Malik Shabazz is probably one of the most prolific, inspirational organizers and recognized person and symbols of the Black Power movement. You can't find a person more quoted and more recognized as a contributor to that than Malcolm X. And so, Alex Haley wrote this book about it. But the point is that May is a very unique month. And I gotta put this in. My battery's gonna go out. I didn't know. And so that's a very crucial. But then the African Liberation Day. Ernest, you may not know. Many people, Black people, don't know. Many of them don't even participate in African Liberation Day. But it started back on the continent, in Ghana, with the movement for African countries. Recognizing their struggle against colonialism, apartheid, and exploitation. And there was a movement to get their freedom. So they started a celebration, and it's called ALD, African Liberation Day, which is very, very, very beautiful, beautiful concept. And it was mostly on the continent at that time. Then it came over to the United States. And it was held in Washington, D.C. And it was called African Liberation Day. And they chose May 25th. And people used to go up there who were participating in it and celebrate it. Then it came on the West Coast. We had the first African or ALD, African Liberation Day here in Los Angeles because the organization that pushed it was the All African Revolutionary Party, started by Stokely Carmichael at that time, but he changed his name to Kwame Ture. Then we decided to have African Liberation Day. Now they chose the 30th of May to have it. Well, at first it was on the 25th, but we chose the 30th. And Bob Farrell, who was a city councilman in Los Angeles, helped us get one of the auditoriums up there where the African American Museum is by SC. They got about three or four places. Matter of fact, I got married in the same building that they gave, that we had our first African Liberation Day. It was packed. I was one of the speakers. Khalid Muhammad, Maulana, I mean, Mark Rigney Thomas, at that time, he was president of the NAACP. He was one of the MCs. It was a beautiful thing, and African, but we said we're going to have it on the European Memorial Day, because our liberation would come. We ain't talking about physical death. We're talking about the death of his exploitation and discrimination, segregation, and racism against African people, killing that. And that was our way. But at the same time, you have to realize that we're not taught these things. And the reason we're not taught these things, because if you take into account of Mother's Day, recognizing the black veterans that were the mothers of black soldiers and stuff that fought in the Civil War, a Memorial Day, Malcolm X Day, and African Liberation Day, they're all a days of resistance. See, a lot of people think we never resisted, even in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They don't talk about the soldiers that tried to save the brother that they was going to lynch. And they fought with the white folks, but they were overwhelmed, but they fought. And see, they don't ever want our children to know, to get a spirit of resistance, even though some have. When Ferguson and in other cities, they have participated in resistance movement. But I'm talking about an organized, ongoing thing. In the 60s, we had the Black Liberation Army. We had those organizations, the Panthers. We had SLANT. We had a number of our YMTD. You had the Deacons of Defense. Black people have resistance struggles, and that's very crucial to teach, because most young people, they think that life was always the way it was when they were born. They don't realize how far we had come through struggle by the time they were born. In other words, the day kid, he don't even think about the cotton fields or the plantations or the enslaved. He think we all had Jack in the Boxes and Disneyland and Magic Mountain. And he didn't know about black coats and that kid, and lynchings and the Emmett Till's, and the struggle to get political representation, and the struggle for the civil rights vote. I mean, these black people voting today, it was a struggle to get them to vote. Not just in the South, but in the North, East, West, because they didn't want us to ever be a part of the system. See, power and influence is two different things. If you have power, if you have influence, the difference between power and influence, what happens is, it's one thing to know somebody that can get you a job or get you in school. It's another thing to know somebody that can give you a job and let you in their school. You see the difference? Most of our people for years were just people with influence. They knew somebody. Remember, we used to say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. That's about people that were able to know somebody that could help you. But now we have Black Power movement, and the whole purpose of Black Power was to be able to realize our will in the opposition of others. No matter how many people try to stop you from doing what you want to do, you're able to do what you want to do because you got the power to do it. And that's very critical from that standpoint. So it's a struggle that many young people don't know. They don't know the history of our struggle. They don't know the history of Mother's Day. They don't know the history of Memorial Day. They definitely don't know that Malcolm X symbolizes black manhood. He was a very disciplined brother. He was a straight A student when he was going to school, just like Martin Luther King. But what Malcolm did, he dropped out of school because of the tragedies in his family. And he got into street life. Then he went to the penitentiary and he changed. Now, why is that important? Because that proved, brother, no matter where you are, you can be self-taught and you can emerge yourself into a strong leader, organizer, or just a strong human being, family man, father. You don't have to be just use drugs and just walk the street. You have self-discipline. Malcolm ate one meal a day. You understand? He very seldom cursed. He respected women. After being a pimp and a hustler, you understand? Now we all got bones in our closet. Where we did things and we say, I just hope the Lord forgive me, or I don't do that no more. And so that's what's the beauty of Malcolm. He's a role model for cats who didn't go to school to use as an instrument and as a model for them to get their lives together. So that was what was cool, beautiful about Malcolm. Not only his words, but his example of black manhood and black love of his people. See, that's sacrifice. Deny yourself. Because this system has a tendency to pull you in to decadent behavior, things you can get away with. And you get caught up in it, in the fantasies of criminality and self-destruction behavior, and enjoy it while you're doing it. Drinking, smoking, you're having a ball. Playing dominoes with weed, blah, 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 having a ball. Instead of studying and figuring out ways to do better, help your family do better, own property, do this and do that. Because the struggle is immense. Most people contribute to our liberation by being strong fathers and mothers, raising their children to be successful. That's a contribution to the liberation. Everybody don't have to be out front arguing with white folks or arguing and demonstrating and doing that. There are different ways you contribute to the struggle. That's the point that I'm trying to make. And so this is the same thing with ALD. We sit up there and we talked about the positive things that black people do, the beautiful things that they do. You see enough degradation, enough devaluation, and enough devastation of our name and our image by the system. So when do we celebrate ourselves for our achievement? It's like when people sick. Like I've been out there, I don't know how many times, I just came home from nothing. But what happened, you be sick. And you say, even though I'm doing bad, there's always somebody else doing worse. And so I'm blessed. I'm glad I'm still here, still living, even though I may be going through some health challenge. Well, some people, they don't see life that way. They only see life based upon just their own perspective of that. I want things. I'm materialistic. And it's called a disease called the want. And the only cure is to have by any means necessary. You get caught up in the European value system. Whereas you sometimes have to sit down with your children and teach them not to be so materialistic, not to be so like I was, you tell them, say, listen, you got to be more efficient with your money. You got to be more efficient with your time. What are you doing? You're wasting time. You understand? I remember my mother and father never asked me did I do my homework in school, because they never finished school, and they didn't know nothing about school that much. They went to, I think my mother went to the sixth grade, my father went to the fourth grade. That was it. I was the first to graduate in the family, from high school and college. My two sisters didn't do it. They were older than brothers. They were older than me, but they didn't graduate on time or with. My sister eventually, one of my sisters that's older than me, eventually graduated from high school. But I was the first to graduate with my grade level. Now, but my parents never asked me, what homework. I just come home. I didn't hit the streets, and start looking for what I can get. Because the only thing we had, we were poor. The only thing we had in the morning is what we got that night. And did a lot of stupid stuff. A lot of stuff that I wouldn't do, and I trained my children not to do. But when I was coming up, you change and you see life different. But the point is, getting back to the, we in celebration of people that paved the way for us to be who we are today, who are martyrs. And that's they're martyrs. I mean, they sacrificed their whole life. When you talk about Denmark Vesey, when you talk about Nat Turner, when you talk about Frederick Douglass, when you talk about Fannie Lou Hamer, when you talk about Mary Bethune, you talk about people that made a difference in our lives. That's very important for us to learn to appreciate them. By what? By not denigrating them. It's just like this, Ernest. A woman carries a baby 9 months. 9 months. She has to watch what she eats when she gets close. She can't sleep on her stomach because the baby's in there. You understand? And then when that baby is born, through struggle, and hopefully that the mom lives, then she feeds the baby before she feeds herself. She sacrificed. She's there to clean that baby, take care of that baby. And you, when the baby, oh, the sweet baby, I love the baby, baby, baby. But she didn't go through all those 9 months and all those sacrifices for the baby to become a dope fiend, or for the baby to grow up and be a thief or in the penitentiary. Most parents want their kids to achieve more than what they achieve. But it ain't gonna just happen unless you got kids with a vision that they got from somewhere else, or just very beautiful in their thoughts, versus kids that don't think that way. And so this is a very important challenge from that standpoint. But the point is that we're here today, and we're in struggle today, and we're in a challenging times today. And everybody don't have to do what we do, educate people and get out in movements and demonstrations and things of that nature. Here's America getting ready to celebrate its 250th year of existence. Trump wanted to put his picture on the money, a $250 bill. Then you have other people that are looking at it, Al Sharpton and and his organization is saying we should not go to the 250-year celebrations and have our own and tell our own story because of the racist, the violation of our the way the system is taking away the civil rights that we have earned. But anyway, Ernest, you have a comment on any of this?
The only thing, you hit something there that kind of got me, didn't get me stirred up, but I thought about when you said like your mom had a fourth grade education, and I found out over my 88 years here, the people that I've met, if you at least got through the fourth grade, you know just about what you need to know. The rest you can learn, you know. But because my uncle was like that. My dad used to, when we were young, said, well, he was only able to go through the fourth grade, and then he would come early in the morning and light the furnace and stuff and chop the wood for the stove, you know, so my dad could get educated. And that's how he got himself even through the fourth grade level. But, you know, he you know, you come up with something, boy, he knew something about it, you know. And then I've always, you know, my mom and dad always said, just try to have yourself prepared on any endeavor that you know, look up on. Try to have yourself trained and prepared so when the opportunity comes, you know, you be ready. And then he always taught me to always look out for my fellow brother. If I can pull another brother up on the job, I do that, you know. And I was able, just like coming through, you know, working for the shipyard, started out as a limited, and just about everything that I acquired, achieved, it was because some other brothers was doing it. Because I played ball with this guy named Nate Station. He filed a federal grievance discrimination act against the electronic shops out there. And then that's how I got promoted. I was on every list they had, and this foreman approaches me, said, Ronnie, you should put in for mechanic, because they was under the hot seat, because they was going to have a federal investigation. So they had to get ready. So that's how I earned a lot of spots, was able to go from a limited mechanic up to the congressional public affairs officer. It was the last job that I held. But it was all, I was, you know, kind of in the right place at the right time. But you had to fight for everything, you know, like you say. But
in those days, it was labor. You could get a job.
Yeah.
You could, and you know, you learn on the job. You know, they didn't have a lot of apprenticeships for us. But you fix your own cars.
Yeah, right.
You built your own houses. I mean, you go to the South, black people built their own houses.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? They got the hammers, nails, wood, and built their own community. That's a whole new different game than what we're looking at today. And that's why I say AI, ancestral intelligence, is authentic intelligence from people that lived it. Like your father lived the struggle. You understand? I mean, Mr. McBride, you know, they give him a lot of recognition today and honor him today. But when he was doing it, he was an irritant. You know, they hate to see him coming, you know. Talk a little bit more about that. Because, you know, did he go to college, or did he, what about your father?
Well, my mother, there was always a stickler on education, because he got through high school himself, you know, studied Marcus Garvey and also Mahatma Gandhi. He really got into that. And, you know, and then the Marcus Garvey Back to Africa movement, he was into that. But like I was able to, my mother would always say, hey, get something in your head because that cannot be taken away. They can't take that away from you. So I went on through City College, got an AA degree in electronic technology. Then I got drafted in the Army. So they put me in an electronic radar unit and then they pulled me over to, and then I got a class action suit, security block on my security clearance. And I wonder what's this. So this went on for about 8 months. Couldn't go nowhere. They took my clearance. I couldn't go nowhere but from the barracks to the mess hall and back. Anywhere else on, I was at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico, and anywhere else I went, you had to be escorted. I had to get an escort. So I filed a grievance against them and even had colonels and stuff. Well, if I was you, Private McBride, I wouldn't do that. I said, yes, you would. I said, because you got something to lose. You a major or you a colonel. I'm a private. I got no stripes. I can't get in it because everything's blocked. Even though I come in and won a football championship for this base, and plus I was a fourth Army track and field high hurdles champ and the long jump champion. And any white guy had done all that, he would have been a sergeant in 2 years because all the guys was telling me that. I said, man, why can't you get promoted? But everything was blocked. And then this major telling me I wouldn't do anything because I would just put up with it. I said, no, not me. So I went to the barracks. You got a paid telephone in there. I got on the phone, dial operator. Told her this is Private Ernest Samuel McBride Jr. from White Sands, Missile Range, New Mexico. And I said, I want to put in a call to Senator Clarence Engel. So he was the head of the Armed Services Committee in the 60s. Because I was in the Army 61, 62. And so they couldn't refuse. And they put me through to his office. The secretary said, well, the senator's not here. Private McBride said, but I'll be sure to give a little brief on what was happening, this blocking action on my clearance, and then they won't tell me anything. And then she said, but they're going to have to explain it to you, and the senator will be in touch with you. Man, and that Monday, I did, no, that Tuesday, I got a call from to the base. So they, and that went on for like 8 months. And my wife and I, we were dating at that time, engaged, and they had sent the FBI and the CIA out here to Long Beach, investigated everybody that knew me, my next door neighbors on both sides and cross the street, and then threatened them to don't tell us or my dad. They was investigating the McBride family. And man, this one, I found all this out later because at the end of the 8 months, they got to call me down to Fort Bliss. So I'm down in there and said, well, we want you to spend the weekend here because they want to talk to you about the clearance because the investigation is clear. And they went through all the stuff that they did. And then the next day, they talking about, we're going to write all this up and form and for you to sign it so we can get your clearance going. Cause and next day I come in, they got this lie detector technician, a civilian guy out of El Paso, and say you'd be willing to either answer the questions not under oath, or the second way you can answer them is under oath. And the third way you can, take Article 15 so you don't incriminate yourself. And I, no, Article 31. I said, shit, well, we'll do that. And man, we went around because, they try to do the good cop, bad cop thing on me. So they was trying to accuse the NAACP organization of being communist. That's when the old, oh, what's his name? You know, the
McCarthy.
guy calling everybody
Yeah, McCarthy.
the
Yeah.
McCarthyism shit. Yeah, so all of that. So they was trying to drag the NAACP and all that. Man, they went through a round of stuff so that this lie detector business come in, talk to me. And so
So
they
what
left
is a
my church.
clearance class? When you say you had to get a clearance, what was that about?
Well, so I was working on a missile base, working on a radar system and on a tracking system and plotting board. And you got this, all this military data that you just running through you, and you programming it in special computers and stuff. And so when that ended, and I finally got the investigation, when I come back out on the site, they put me with this laser research and development group. That's when Hughes Aircraft Company in the 60s was developing the laser system, where they was doing it with this engineer I was working for there. So I said, man, so I kind of lost a lot of time, but they apologized after we did the lie detector test. Because the guy told me, even in the beginning, he said, "I can tell you now, they don't believe you, what you're telling them." Because they was asking me, was my dad ever have any communist meetings? It was shit. I was 3 or 4 years old. I wouldn't have known it if it did, So, and asked me any communist paraphernalia in our house, like the Daily People, communist magazines and stuff. So all that kind of stuff. And so when I, when that was over, because my daughter told me, "Now you need to write a book, Dad, on all this stuff." I said, "Maybe I will," because I tried to go back Freedom of Information Act, and got a lot of info on him, and then I tried to get my investigation record out of Fort Bliss, and they making like nothing existed. This is all we have is you was stationed at White Sands Missile Range for 2 years, so they don't even have none of that stuff. So I don't know how I can ever get it. They might have destroyed it by now, since it was so long ago. But shit, but just like that, the guy after the investigation, he said, "I can tell you, Mr. Private McBride, looked like you've been telling them the truth, but I can tell you now, they didn't believe you, so, but I'm gonna finish this report, send it to the FBI and CIA, and then you hear from them about your clearance, and I'm recommending, hey, that they give it back to you." So I got it back. So but shit, without that, I in the
So
field I had chosen, I wouldn't have been able to.
you had to get a clearance to work on the things that you wanted to, that they had you working on. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what that clearance was. It was a
Oh.
top secret clearance, and I wouldn't have gotten it had I not went through this, because I almost didn't. Because I went back to the barracks and called to, because see, my sister in the early 50s, she went to the shipyard to work as a clerk, typist, passed the tests and all that, and they come and got her. She was there about 3 weeks, and they come and got her and pulled her in the office and said, "Well, in order for you to continue to work for the federal government, you're gonna have to sign a separate loyalty oath." He said, "What?" Said, "Was anybody else sign it?" "Well, no, it's just you." She said, "Hell no, I ain't signing shit." And she quit, So my mother, when I was telling her about this, she said, "Yeah, you should support, I mean, pursue this to the end." And then that's what I did. So for like 8 or 9 months, man, I walked around the base, and damn lieutenants and shit would see me coming, even in civilian clothes. And I'm getting ready to salute them, and they, "Good morning, Private McBride." They all knew me by name on the base. And I did everything I wanted to do, got up when I just get up for reveille and then go eat and then come back and hit my bunk or go down the day room or something, because I couldn't do nothing else. Get some of
No,
that money on trade in 9 months.
you didn't go to Vietnam.
No. See, they wouldn't have sent me even then, because some guys, I got out Friday evening on August 27th, 1963, and there were some guys that were supposed to get out that Monday morning the following week. They got 6 months extensions A lot of them. And I said, damn, maybe I'm glad I had this on me, but they probably wouldn't have sent me anywhere until this investigation is over. Because when I got out and was in the reserve, I hit the air base. I worked for that Nike Herc, that missile site up on Palo Verde Hill, up on the hill. I
Yeah.
was working for them because they have missile bases all around him. And I was working for a base out in Stanton. And the guy told me, he said, well, I don't know if about your clearance. And I give him my clearance number 2225 Alpha. That's my security clearance number. And he made a call. He talking about you have to usually wait about 3 weeks to hire you. Shit, and he called me the next day. Said, "Yeah, you clear." So
So after you got out the service, you stayed in the reserve.
yeah, I had 4 more years to do, and then when a friend of mine got me that job with that Nike Hercules place up a Palo Verde up there, Arthur Daniels was in there because he had been electronic tech, radar tech in the Army. And he said, man, I'm colorblind on now, and I can't read the codes on the resistors, on the components. So I'm gonna have to quit. And he told me about his job. And he said, I'll talk to the captain and tell him about you. And the guy hired me over the telephone. He said, you come on out here and just saw me once. And then he hired me. And shit, man, so that kind of helped me. And then I went to Downey out here, Autonetics, when they was working on the space stuff out there, and hired in there, got a job, man. And then I went up through to the last thing, security clearance, because you did real good on the test, and went up to security. And he come back out and said, well, I'm sorry, Mr. McBride, we're not going to be able to hire you. And a lot of places I go, and that's what would happen. And I say, well, why? And well, I can't talk to you about that because that's security stuff. And shit, when I that was kind of, well, that was before I went in the Army out there. And so, but anyway, they hired me for one. I filed a grievance on them with the Fair Employment Practice Commission because they were government contractors, and you cannot discriminate, So that's what made them hire me for a day, and then they said we go pending the security investigation and shit. And in the meantime, that was like shit. And after I got out of the Army, that was like in the fall, and then in February, I just went and parked my car up on Hawthorne Boulevard and Century and parked it over on one side of the street. And I got on the opposite side of the street and I walked all the way down Hawthorne Boulevard and went in every building to apply for a job. And I happened to get down where a national cash register was. And I went in there and the girl, well, we're not hiring. I said, well, I need to. I said, well, do you ever hire? Oh, yeah, sometimes we do hire. I said, well, that they pull that one on me. So I said, well, no, I need to fill out an application, have it on file. Say, because when you do hire, you'll have mine. And she thought, oh, let me go see. She had to go check with somebody. And some guy said, yeah, give him one. And I filled it out, give it to him. That was like on a Friday, Tuesday, my friend. Phone was ringing off the hook. The guy wanted me to come out for an interview, and then they hired me. And I worked there for about 6 months, and they threatened a layoff because we were working in the building with 300 women making printed circuit boards and stuff. And we test them, and repair them, and then send them to the guys working on banks and cash registers out in the city, Once a card go bad, they turn it in, replace it, and then we repair it, So I did that for like about 6 months before I went to the shipyard. And then I went call them on the phone.
So
And
you worked at the shipyard. How many
I
years?
worked there for 32 years from
What was it like?
Oh, it was, they was racist when I first got there. We had to do a lot of
Is
fighting
it what they
there to
call
get
the Navy
past.
Shipyard? Navy? What did they call it, the Navy
Yeah,
Shipyard?
Long Beach Naval Shipyard, yeah.
Yeah, my dad
On
used
the
to work.
island, yeah. It
And
was a
then
lot of blacks moved up. I just joined the National Association of Federal Employees through Orange County Credit Union. And a lot of my, because I made Black Male Employee of the Year in 6 and 92. And they had a female one, and she was there. I ran into her again after, and we've been retired 30 years, But we was talking about old times, yeah. But boy, we had to fight because the day we was fighting for that, my buddy, because I played softball in the evening. We had a city league team, and this
You
guy
work and then go play ball.
Nate, yeah, he was. Nate Station was in Sonar, boy, and they was really having a racist supervisor over there. And Nate filed a federal charge against him, and I knew about it, found out about it. And then the day they hired us, we were sitting in this GS 13's office, and the phone rang, and it was me and another brother, black guy named Rich Kablan. And Grady Matthews and Mike Hoffick, it was four of us. So, because I was the only guy in the shipyard trained in the 3D radar, and Rich was 2D. And then Matt, this guy, Grady, was the IFF, Identification Friend, the full expert. And then the other guy did radar councils, Mike Hoffick. But boy, we was in there when the phone rang and the way the guy was sweating, well, I don't know, well, I don't know, but I could, I got, and he tried to lower his voice. I got two of them sitting in my office right now. We only two black guys, right? Rich Kablan, myself, and he hangs the phone up. And I knew what he was gonna say before he said. He said, I want to ask you guys something, and I don't. I said, you want to ask us if it's racial discrimination at this shipyard? I said, hell yeah, it is. Shit. So, boy, I'm telling you, we had a time in 32 years. I had to go. They even try to kick me out of the. They put me back through the apprenticeship program for electronic mechanic, and the guy wanted to. Tried to kick me out because the supervisor you work for in the radar shop, each week you do a job and they have this log book, apprentice log, where they grade you on above average, average, I mean, better than average, average, low, and below. And this he was giving me like low every week. And me and the guys, it was like eight white guys in there, myself. And they'd come over there and we'd always compare grades and say, shit, Ernie, you're doing way better than we are. Why the hell are you giving you lows? I said, hell if I know. Because I went and asked him once, well, I think you deserve it. I said, okay, motherfucker. I'll just wait and bide my time. And they tried to kick me out. If you get two unsatisfactories, they eliminate you. So I got two unsats, and they go to the big firm and try to kick me out. And, he, and the but the instructor has to prove it. Nobody can override him. And the instructor said, "Nope, I found this out later." Said, "Nope, I'm not kicking." I said, "What you mean you're not kicking him out?" He said, "I'm just what I said." So he's the best damn student I get in got in there. I don't know what the problem is between him and his supervisors over there. But I talked to these other eight white guys every week, and they verified he's doing better work than any fucking body in that shop. And they giving him them low grades. So I don't know what the problem is, say, but I'm not kicking him out the program. So that's what saved me,
That's a beautiful story, man.
He said, I'm not kicking him out, and he's gonna stay in here. Then when I brought that up, they about shit. We had a little meeting, and then the general foreman that was trying to get me kicked out, say, well, we decided we had a meeting. We're not gonna kick McBride out of the full program after all. Well, I already knew this because I heard it from one of my cohorts that had talked to the instructor, you know, and said, and then I said, well, I don't know what the problem is. I say, but I know one thing. I say, I'm getting sick and tired of this, you know, getting these low grades and don't deserve them. And so the only thing I can say if I'm in the apprenticeship program with eight other individuals, they say I'm doing equal to or even better than most of them. They're getting all above average and average and superior. And I'm getting low, and then these two unsatisfactories. I say, so the only thing that I can think must be some racial discrimination. Boy, and they about shit it when I said so. Ernie, you said a while ago, he waited for about 5 minutes. We was talking. You said you think it's racial discrimination. I said, Dale Walls. Dale Walls was his name. I said, General Foreman Walls, if you were in my spot, you're getting better grades than these other eight individuals. They're getting better grades than you. You're getting low grades. And then all of a sudden they want to kick you out. What would you think? Well, and I'm black and you guys are white. What in the hell would you think it was? Because I got pissed then, you know. So then they, well, yeah, I can see how you would think that, but I assure you, we don't have, because see, this Washington, D.C. was getting ready to come out there in a couple of weeks, you know. So they wanted to quit. So shit, that next 3 or 4 days is when the foreman that had been giving me all them loads talking about, man, I came into work one morning, you know, we start 7:30. I usually get there by 10 after 7. He want to know, Ernie, you put in for mechanic? So everything start happening then. I said, yeah, I've been on the list. It was like number two on the list for 3 or 4 years. And when they promote, they get like five at a time, and I never got a call. Shit, the next week I was system mechanic first. No, I made mechanic. And then after that, about 3 weeks, I made system mechanic. And then one morning I come in 73, and he said, Ernie, says, we're going to school because my buddy worked on 2D radar and inspection, quality assurance with all the engineers working. They wanted a 3D radar man over there, and they was telling my buddy he was one of the best 2D radar men we had, that they was gonna hire him. And say if he, or if he went to 3D school, they was gonna definitely hire him. So he was supposed to go, and then they hired. No, they told him, "Oh, don't go because they gonna hire him." And so I come walking in. He said, "Ernie, you wanna go to 3D school?" I said, "Where's that at?" "San Mare Island." I said, "What in the hell is that at?" "Vallejo." I said, shit, this was like during the week just before Christmas. I said, damn, man, that's how long? 9 months. I said, shit, you know, I had to move up there for 9 months. But that was just one white dude I worked with, ex-Marine named Mike Starr. He was the only guy in the Naval shipyard that had been to that school. And he told me, he said, Ernie, we work on jobs together, and he said, "Man, if you ever get a chance to go to 3D radar school, go," said, "because then you can write your own ticket on this base." And I accepted, and I went up there for the 9 months, and come back from that, and then promotion, and then they hired me over in the quality assurance group, and then that's when I got out of the mechanical stuff, actually working on the gear to writing test reports and doing tests, you know, devising tests for the system and all that. And then they start sending, we go down to San Diego for like 2 or 3 days of school. And shit, I must have went to end up going to about 15 different schools during my career
Aaron,
there.
they're having an election in Long Beach. The existing black mayor is running again.
Well, I don't think
He's
is
not
he up
turned
for
down,
re-election?
huh?
I was just in a meeting with him last week. Sharon Kroon gave a for I told you she had formed this African American culture group district. And we've been in there for about 3 years. And so she invited him over to church. And he was over there Sunday night. I didn't know. And then once, well, about 5 months ago, for the status of the city, he gave something at her house she did. My brother and I went over there. So yeah, he's a pretty good mayor too. Man, he kind of gave a little of his background.
So do they elect him citywide?
Yeah, for the mayor citywide, and
Because
for
there's a bunch of people running.
council is each district, you know.
There's a bunch of people running.
Yeah.
You think you're gonna make it?
Oh yeah, I don't think nobody can challenge because man, he's good at a lot of stuff he's been doing. And Trump, well, I haven't really heard in depth, you know, because I'm not actually in the community. When I go over there, everybody I grew up with and died, and I don't hardly know anybody. That's why I got in this group with Sharon then, because at least we meet once a month and we can find out some things that's going on, you know.
Okay. Well, listen here, as we're gonna go here and cut the news, I
Okay.
want to say, man, thanks for that education on your history,
Alrighty,
man.
so.
Unique history, brother. And your granddaughter, right? Give her the company right
Well,
back.
my daughter in France, she called over because we talked for hours. She'll call and she records everything. She got all this recorded, you know. She goes, Dad, we got to do a book on you too, you know.
Yeah, that'd be beautiful, man. I'm looking
Yeah.
forward. But anyway, next week I'm gonna have a brother named Nshinga, and he's gonna talk about the rites of passage for young men.
Oh, okay.
And so we'll be on there next week. All right.
Oh, good. All right.
All
What
right.
about tomorrow? What's happening tomorrow?
I don't know, Rashid. He didn't say anything. Who's tomorrow, Rashid?
We got Dr. Inky coming on.
Or Dr. Anki? What are you going to talk about?
It's kind of like a general topic. The topic is how can we as a group share this message and apply the teachings to our lives?
All right.
So it's kind of general.
I'm gonna send you in Chinga's name tomorrow for Tuesday. The brother I'm gonna have on next Tuesday. He's from the Culture Center, and he's a Sabati, and he's gonna talk about the rites of passage for young men, a program that how they do it, and maybe other people can use it as a framework to work with young people. Okay.
Okay,
All
so
right, man.
we're closing out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so each one teach what in Black Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
All right.
Okay, you too.